So basically we're here in Manchester Academy with the legend himself, is Richie Cotson.
Richie Cotson.
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 There we go. Now we know. Do you mind if brought
in? No, no, knock yourself out.
Okay, so 5 years old, you learned the piano. Were you brought up in a musical household, or?
Not really. I mean, you know, my parents were into music. My dad was into soul music and R&B. And my mom was into all the rock stuff at the time. You know, she saw the Beatles and the Stones when they first came to America, and Hendrix, Janis Joplin. So those were the records that were played in my house. That's the stuff that I was familiar with, you know.
Okay, because obviously, you know, the blues-rock fusion which you have going on now is just so evident that it's been something that has been embedded in you from an early age, because it comes to you with such ease. You can switch between the two and mix the two up together. Do you find that it's easy for you to do that?
Yeah, I guess it's a part of my my makeup. You know, it's like you kind of come up in a certain environment. You grow up and you hear things, and they become a part of who you are, you know, and it comes out later on, you know.
Okay. So you've had, you know, the multi-award-winning act sort of lifestyle from looking from the outside in. Do you feel that maybe you never had a definite idea of where you were going, but you would do a bit of this and a bit of that, and now you're solo and focusing on that?
I always, from the beginning, knew that I wanted to do what I'm doing now, which is be a, you might want to shut that door, is be a solo artist, and really it's what I've always been. In other words, my first record came out in 1989, I was 18 when I recorded it, and it came out as Richie Cotson, and I did three more, and then I joined a popular band for a year. And then I went back to making records and did about 12 more.
Yeah.
I tried another popular band for about another 2 years and went back and did another, you know, 7 records. So for me, the constant has always been I learned to play the guitar so that I could write and record and perform my songs. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really the whole idea behind what I want to do. And the thing that's interesting about me, I think, from an outside perspective, is that when you have someone that starts making records at 18, you get this kind of documentation of their growth. So,
absolutely,
you know, the first record, I didn't even sing on the first record. And then the second record I sang, didn't sound quite as good as I sounded, you know, 3 years later. So you can kind of hear the natural progression, not only of me as a musician, but also as a writer.
Very much so. I was just going to say the difference from sort of earlier things that I've looked at to the latest album is, I think age is the main difference that's shone out for me, because the latest album, you know, the one song, and I forget it off the top of my head, but it's all about paying dues, that's it. It's all about, you know, what you've gone through in life. Is that a mirror of your life, do you think?
I think all, you know, I think most of the songs that I've written are, you know, off of an experience. Either something that I've gone through directly or something I've observed, you know? So I tend to write things that are kind of like conversational, you know? I'm not a real abstract writer. I always liked songs and lyrics that kind of told a story and kind of expressed something that was real on a, you know, a human level, something that you can kind of feel. So I think that's reflected in my writing. And like you're picking up on that song, for example.
I love that song. It's my most favorite of the album.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
I absolutely adore it.
And you know what's funny about that song is it came about at the end. In other words, most of the record was done, and I realized, you know, I just, as a record, a collection of songs, I would have loved to have a couple of more up-tempo tunes. And I just had that thought, and the next day I wrote Pay and Dues and Peace Sign on the same day, and they just came out. So, and they ended up being two of the cooler tunes on the record. We play both of them live, and
I think it's fun, because to me, it's a song that says, yeah, you know what, we fuck up in life, but it's okay.
Sure.
You know what?
Yeah, exactly.
Horrendous.
So that's cool, you got it. Yeah.
But life's okay, we can go on, which is great. So, How is the release of that album, Peace Sign, going?
It's cool. I have released it first in Japan.
Yeah.
It came out on September 9th.
You have a massive following in Japan, don't you?
You know, I everybody tells me that, but I haven't been there in 3 years.
Really?
Yeah, it's funny. There was a period of time where I toured there a lot. The last time I toured there, I opened for the Rolling Stones and did five shows.
Yeah, I was reading that. That must have been phenomenal.
And that was really cool, but I haven't been back since then. So I would be anxious to see, you know, what would happen once I finally go back. Hopefully I do go back soon. But the record came out there first.
That's right.
And then it actually just became available in the States 2 days ago.
Nice.
And we have it here at the gigs. You know, anybody that comes to the show can pick up the CD.
Because you can get it off CD Baby as well.
Sure, yeah, online, yeah.
That's good. I mean, you've massively toured, and you've got another massive tour. Do you enjoy the touring, or do you see it as something you have to do as part of the job?
I'll tell you what I like. I really like getting on stage, playing with my band. And I like having an audience to play to. And afterwards, I usually go, and if certain people hang around, so I'll, hang around and sign stuff. And I enjoy that entire process. I love it. I feel really lucky. The process of moving from point A to point B drives me crazy. I absolutely hate it. And I don't like traveling. I like seeing stuff and getting to new locations, but I don't like the process. But, it's like I'm doing what I love, so there's got to be some element of, it can't all be, pleasant,
No.
So to me, I look at it like, look, that is the work aspect of it is sitting in a vehicle for 8 hours, or sitting on an airplane for 12 hours to get here, whatever it is, that's the job part. But all this other stuff, getting on stage, that's like a pleasure, I'm really lucky to be doing that.
23 solo albums.
No,
a severe amount of other albums.
Yeah, right. Severe is a good
one. Well, I don't know any other artist that has got so much variety in what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned, Richie?
Well, as far as it relates to making records, I'll tell you something. I learned a lesson when I did a record called Into the Black. And I wasn't aware of what was going on until after it was completed. But that record was never really intended to be a record. In other words, I had a summer where I wrote 3 or 4 tunes and just recorded them and then forgot about them. I wrote You Can't Save Me, The Shadow, Fear, and Doing What the Devil Says to Do. I wrote them, recorded them, and they sat on the hard drive. A couple months later, I wrote a couple more tunes. And then a couple months after that, I went, browsing around in my computer. I started listening to the stuff, and I was like, wow, I got 10 songs here that are really cool. 10 songs that kind of wrote themselves, that I didn't have any pressure about delivering an album or a deadline. There was no record company guy telling me, we need another rocker, we need another up-tempo, or play more guitar, trying to tell me what they think my fans want. There was none of that. It was just a pure recording process. And it turns out that I probably made what, according to the people that I talked to, is probably my best record, because it just kind of made itself. And it was just an honest collection of songs. So the lesson I learned, to answer your question, was from then on, my attitude is I'm not going to release a record until I feel like that. In other words, the next thing I did after that was a record called Go Faster.
Right.
And when I did that, I basically had the same kind of thought, like, I'm not going to make a record until I have 12 songs that are just there that I love. And then if I have that, I can call it a record and put it out. And so that's kind of how I operate. I don't force myself to write songs. I let them write themselves. And, I don't believe in writer's block. I think when you don't have anything to say, you just don't write. It just doesn't happen. And when you're inspired, that's when your writing happens.
Absolutely. You mentioned before that you have a band. Do you have the same band that works with you, or does it differ?
It does differ. In the studio, most of the time I'm playing everything myself. Occasionally I'll call people in to help me, which I enjoy. You know, I like working with people. It's just that because of my environment where I live, the studio's right there, and I get an idea at 3 in the morning, I want to roll. So I go in there and I start working, and if I come out of the studio the next day with something I like, you know, it's done. I move on. But as far as the band, I have a new bass player on this tour. The drummer I'm playing with has been playing with me now for 3 tours. And, you know, I would love to keep the same band together, but the reality is it's not a band. It's really me and my music. Yeah. And it's a situation where I have to find guys that I like, that I can get along with on the road, but guys that can play the music the way I hear it and understand. So it's not really easy, you know. And then what I have to contend with is the notion that, you know, there's other artists out there that are that can offer a lot more on, maybe not on a musical level, or maybe on a musical level, but also on a financial level. So, you know, I'm prone to lose guys. I lost a great drummer to Lenny Kravitz. I'm happy for the guy. But I can't compete with what, you know, Lenny can offer the guy. So, you know, that happens. And so, you know, again, it isn't a band, so I kind of understand that. You know, it's, you know, these guys are playing a support role. And it's like putting a team together. You want to find the best guys to do what you need them to do.
And like you said, they have to understand your music. Sure. If they don't get it, they're not going to.
You know, it's funny. I always get these offers. Well, you know, come to our country and do, you know, a tour, and we'll supply a band for you. We've got great musicians here in, you know, whatever country it is. And like, you know, you don't understand. See, I'm not looking to just go play gigs. You know, I cannot play gigs at all. You know, but if I'm going to play gigs, they have to be on my terms and in a way that I know I'm going to be at my best, because there's so many other variables that work against you, be it equipment, the acoustics of a room, maybe a show isn't promoted so there's not very many people, or maybe it's over promoted and there's too many people in a small place and there's no air. When I played in Camden, I thought I was going to faint because it was so hot in there. You know, there's all kinds of weird variables. So my point is, the last thing I want to do is put myself in a position where I'm stacking the odds against me by playing with the wrong musicians.
Absolutely.
I'd rather not play. I'll stay home, you know.
Comment.
Yeah.
Well, like you say, you've got to work with someone, so it's got to be right.
Yeah.
You mentioned there you have your own studio and recording studio and production. Is that still going? And do you have other artists that you help, or is it purely for you?
Well, there was something, what you're referring to is, I believe in early 2000s, maybe it was 01, 02, I had purchased a commercial building, and I made it into a recording studio. And I realized the studio business is not for me. And, you know, so I moved away from that, and I always had the equipment, you know. So when that studio was functioning, it was all the stuff that lived at my house, moved down there. And interestingly enough, in that 3-year period, I was the least productive as far as recording music as I was when the studio was in my home. So in other words, a personality like me, it's better to have it in my home than outside my home.
So you can literally fall out of bed and into the
studio. Exactly. Because what would happen to me is I'd have an idea. Let's say I get an idea at 1:30 in the morning. Now, normally I can just walk into the room and start working. I always leave the equipment on, so it's, you know, everything's mic'd up, ready to go. In the days of the studio, when I had the building, I'd have to get in my car, put the alarm on the house, lock up, drive down there, park, turn the alarm on, whatever, off, go in. By the time I got a guitar on, I had done so many physical moves that I forgot what I was going there for. You know, so it wasn't for me. And the other thing about production that I learned is very interesting. If somebody wants you to really produce them, it can be a really, really great thing. And you can work together. But a lot of young bands don't really want to be produced. They just kind of want to have someone record their demo for free.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't really get excited by that, you know.
No.
So it was almost like, you know what, what I really love to do is write and record. So I'll write and record. If somebody wants to do it with me, great. If not, I can do it on my own, you know.
You've been around a long time in the business. What would you say has made you still be around today?
Well, I think everything that I do is based on me doing what I want and not doing what I think I need to do to put myself over to the masses. So what has happened is, like I said earlier, I have all these, you know, years of putting out records and kind of experimenting a lot. And maybe over the last 10 years, I really kind of fell into home, for lack of a better word. I think the honesty in my work appeals to a certain group of people that allows me to come, you know, to England and do a tour and have an audience to play for and have people come, you know, into the room. It has to do with the fact that I'm doing something that's kind of real, you know. It took a long time for me to learn how to play the guitar, and a lot of things happen in my life so that I can write songs, and people relate to it, you know.
So it's good that you've been through so many experiences from a songwriting perspective.
And from a music perspective. I mean, you know, it's like, this is a tool to express yourself, not to impress anyone, but to express what's going on. If there's nothing going on, nothing's going to happen with the instrument. But if I'm inspired, then something kind of cool could happen. Yeah. And I never know what's going to happen. Sometimes I go on the stage, I'm not inspired, and it's not a good gig. That happens. And sometimes it is inspired, and something really cool happens. And that's why I allow people to film.
Right.
It's like, you know, I would say 70% of my gigs, I walk away feeling like I wasn't really at my best. I wasn't as inspired as I should have been most of the time. But occasionally I really do hit something where I walk off the stage and I feel like, wow, I really feel like I went somewhere else, you know, I transported myself somewhere else. And it's kind of cool, you come back to Earth and go, well, what happened there in that hour and a half? You know, I like that feeling. So, you know, somebody wants to film that and they enjoy that, film it. Go ahead.
Yeah, because aren't you asking for people, especially on the website, to bring their cameras to
sure, I'm encouraging people.
Sure,
I'm encouraging people to film it, because you never know, something really cool might happen. And, you know, my cousin was a big Grateful Dead fan, and she would go everywhere, all over America, and follow them. And when I stayed with her, I stayed at her place in San Francisco for like 3 months, and they had a room. The whole wall was all digital tapes of all the Grateful Dead shows. They were all experiences that she had. Each show represented, you know, a different event. Because every time that band played, they played a little different.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we're a trio, so it's more aggressive, but it's a similar kind of thing. You know, you come to see it, take it with you. The night you've been there, it might have sucked.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe you get there on a night where something really cool happens and you have that, you know? So that's kind of my philosophy.
Do you think you're your own biggest critic?
Yeah, I'm real hard on myself.
Yeah,
I really am.
From just talking to you, reading about you.
I am. The only reason I know that I'm hard on myself is because people that really know me really well tell me that. From my perspective, I don't know that I'm hard on myself. I just, I want things. If I'm going to get, it's not even about perfection. If I'm going to get on the stage and this, you're going to watch me, I don't want you watching me and I'm not under the best possible circumstances I could be under. Because then I'm not going to be really as true as I could be. That's the kind of thing that drives me crazy. You know?
You're obviously at one with your guitars. Did I read that you have a couple of guitars named after you?
I have two signature models with Fender that we did. One's a Tele, one's a Strat. I don't have either one of them here. What I have here is a prototype of what might become a limited edition signature model guitar.
Right.
So we did a few changes to it. More expensive wood, changed the hardware, eliminated the pick guard, used reverse mount electronics, but all the other stuff that goes in line with the existing model is the same. So it's kind of like a hot-rodded sort of version of my signature model guitar.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Do you, I mean, obviously you're so honored that, you know, that sort of happens, you know.
It's cool, especially that it's Fender, you know. It's like,
yeah.
Fender's the guitar that I play. My style has evolved around this guitar. I've been playing it since 1990.
Wow.
I was secretly playing Fenders when I was endorsing Ibanez, and they were making me Fender copies through a brand called Starfield.
Right.
And finally, in 91, I was making a record. Fender came to the studio, said, hey man, just play our guitars. You want to play a Telecaster? Play a real one, here. And they gave me a Tele, and that became my main guitar. And then later that was altered and became my model. So, That I'm really grateful that that went that way.
Excellent. So you're over here promoting the album. What's been the highlight of the album for you so far?
The response that I'm getting, because, you know, you do something and then you walk away from it, and it's real easy to start second-guessing or thinking, oh, I should have did that or should have did that. I tend to, like, trust my instincts. When I leave the studio, if I hear it and I'm like, no, that's it. That's what I wanted that song to sound like. I'm happy with it. If I can say that for every song, I know I'm done. Okay. I know that's my vision. So take it or leave it. But when you get outside that and you get out here and people come up to you and start telling you about lyrics that, you know, that they connect with, or, you know, even, you know, the guitar fans, you know, how did you play that one thing or whatever, it's cool. It's a nice feeling. You know, it isn't the motivation for why I do it, but it's like a nice reward for someone to come up and say, hey man, you know, your tune, whatever, you know, whatever song, you know, they name a song, I really liked it, or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, that makes me feel, hey man, thanks, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's just people taking time out, isn't it? To really listen and get what you do.
Totally.
So, advice for the younger artists that seem to be crawling out of the woodwork, what kind of advice would you give to them about not only getting into the business, but how to stay in the business?
Well, you know, it's a lot different than it was when I was a young artist. So, you know, I think the thing that it still kind of comes down to is, depends on what, it really depends on what you want to do. I mean, if you want to be a star or a celebrity, that's a different kind of thing. You don't necessarily need to sit down and spend 20 years and learn to play the guitar. You don't have to do that. You just have to have a whole set of other things that I don't really know what that is, because that's not what I am.
Yeah.
So, if you want to do what I did, you know, I spent a long time trying to get to a point where I felt like I could express myself through an instrument. That's what I wanted to do. All I ever wanted to do was play the guitar and play my music, and that's it, and not do anything else. That means not go and, you know, work at the at the Starbucks. It means all I do is play the guitar and sing and write my songs and perform. So I'm lucky. But that's all I focused on.
Yeah.
All I thought about was music. All I did was play. So I put time into it. And then once I got confidence, then I started to play with other musicians.
Yeah.
And then once I felt like we could get on stage without embarrassing ourselves, we started playing gigs locally. And then once we did that, people started talking about, oh, you got to go see this band. You know, they're young kids and they sound really good. And then you build on it. And so you just kind of have to be, if you're going to be in music, you have to be a musician. You know, that means you learn an instrument, you play, and then you go out and perform and play. If you're doing it for any other reason than the love of music, prepare to be disappointed. If you're doing it expecting to win a Grammy or to see yourself on TV or to have people tell you how great you are, you have it backwards, and you really should just kind of get out, because you're doing it for all the wrong reasons. You know, maybe go on, try an audition for American Idol.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great but that's a great way to get there quick. Because that game is a lottery game.
Yeah.
It's a lottery game. But if you really want to be a musician, you can learn an instrument and go anywhere in America and go and play in a club somewhere and be a gigging musician. Go to Vegas and get a gig, or, you know, you can do it. And that's what it is playing music. You know, you can't look at somebody else and say, well, I want what they have, because you're not them. Mm. You know? I would have loved to have been in the Beatles, but I wasn't around then. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, I'm not that guy. I'm this guy, so I do what I do. You know.
Yeah. What's next for Richie?
Well, I'm going to do a gig tonight.
Never.
As far as I know. And I don't know. I don't think in terms of what I did or what I'm going to do. But, you know, I'm hoping that I can continue to play music. That's what I would like to see. I would like to see whatever it is that I've done that got me in the position I'm in. I'd like to keep doing that, because I'm really grateful and happy to be doing what I'm doing.
Are you in a place you want to be now?
I really am, mentally and spiritually and the whole bit. That's not to say I don't get into situations where I get pissed off. You know, if things go against the grain, or, you know, in a way that I don't want them to go, I'm human. You know, and it doesn't mean that I want to, you know, take things to the next level and do all those kinds of things, but there's a reality of what you really can control. I can't control how many people come to see me play. I can't control how many people buy my record. But I can control what I do, mm-hmm. what I play, what I write, what I make available. And so I want to, you know, I want to continue to express myself through music. And if nobody likes it, nobody buys it, that's fine. That's not what I'm doing it for. I'm doing it the same way I breathe. I breathe air because I need to like we do, you know. I need to make music. Otherwise, I might be doing something else. I'd be building houses, probably. But still, it's something that's creative, where I feel like I'm doing something, not just sitting.
Yeah.
You know, which I guess there are people that do just sit, and they're really peaceful and happy. You know, that's a whole other thing. That would be kind of cool to be able to do that, but I'm not there yet. Maybe I will be when I'm older. That'll be what I do then.
So. I think you'll still be going doing all in another 40 years.
Right.
What's the best bit about going home?
Well, what is they say? What they say? It's not the destination, it's the journey.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like, it's a weird thing that happens, you know, I get anxiety about leaving home, and then once I'm here, I'm excited to play, and I'm enjoying it, and then after a while, I start thinking about home, and I'm excited to go home towards the end of the tour. And then I get home, and I'm like, all right, I'm home now, I gotta go, I gotta go out again. So it's this continuous, like, motion, you know, it's kind of cool.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I wish you all the luck in the world. So looking forward to seeing you live tonight. Travel 2 hours just to see you. So.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming, and hope to get all the answers you're looking for.
That's wonderful. All right, thank you very much.